Hey, hi. Welcome to Someone Else's Movie, the original podcast where an actor, writer, director, or nebulous industry figure gives a little love to a movie they didn't make. I'm Norm Wilner, senior film writer for Now Magazine, and this is The Other Thing I Do. My guest this week is Cody Smit McPhee, an actor you may know from his roles in The Road, Let Me In, and Paranorman. He also starred in John McClane's Slow West and the last wave of X-Men movies where he played Kurt Wagner, also known as Nightcrawler. In writer-director Seth Lurney's 2067, he's cast as a young husband offered the chance to save humanity by traveling into the future to find the solution to a looming global extinction, but that means leaving behind his beloved wife, possibly forever. It's available on VOD right now from A71 Entertainment. Cody picked Mr. Nobody, Yakov Van Dormael's 2009 fantasia about the many lives of a man named Nemo Nobody, who's played by Jared Leto. Built equally out of digital effects and whimsy, the movie shuffles us through the infinite possibilities of Nemo's existence. He's the oldest man in the world, he's a young man on a terrifying voyage to Mars, he's married to women played by Diane Kruger, Sarah Pauly, and Lin Dan Pham, and through all of these visions, the story keeps returning to a crucial moment in Nemo's childhood, a moment that defines everything and nothing. This is someone else's movie.
I will say that there was obviously a couple options, but some of them may have been done before, so I did choose 2001 Space Odyssey, Mr. Nobody, and The Matrix. Yeah. The Matrix, I feel like, you know, everyone gets the gist of why that was so amazing and what it did for the world and cinema world. And 2001, I believe, was done before.
Yeah.
But Mr. Nobody, I had only recently watched, actually. My partner showed it to me. And it reminded me of kind of like Butterfly Effect.
Mm-hmm.
But one on steroids. Like, I don't want to say done right, because I wouldn't ever want the Butterfly Effect to not exist, but this just tripped me out. It's absolutely crazy. I feel like I don't even know how to put my finger on why I love it. I think obviously the filmmaking itself is so different, because it's like jumping into a new film every 15 seconds, every time he dies and comes into another life. The clothing, the filters, the lenses, all that stuff, it keeps changing throughout the film, which is such a cool element to work with. But also I think I just love the kind of, I don't know if you want to call it spiritual sci-fi or just like straight up quantum physics or something, but the element that shows that, like, he's simply, it really shows you the observer, which is a big thing of spirituality. You know, you talk about what you identify with, which is your personality, which is an accumulation of what you sponged in from your environment and your peers, parents, teachers. And one day we find ourselves within the seat of what we call ourself, and we defend that with all our might, even to our death. We even debate people over it, politically, sports, all this stuff. And yet, do we really know what we're defending if we don't know the core of what we identify with? So that's something I've like followed passionately in my life, is to understand who and what I am, and to come to the realization that you're somewhat nothing, or at least nothing to do with what you thought you were, it's amazing. And I think that's what Mr. Nobody conveys. It's kind of like it's like a paradox. It's not that you're nothing. It's like when you become nothing, you become everything in a way. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. It's my take on it was that it is about the filmmaker trying to wrestle with both the philosophical idea of the infinite possibilities of what a child can be ultimately, because that's the perspective it starts with. Yeah. But also the toy box of digital effects that Van Dormael had never, like, I don't know if you're familiar with his other work, but he's not that guy. He's not an effects guy. He made films like The Eighth Day, which is about the relationship between an adult. How can I put this without sounding dismissive? His concepts are very reductive previously. Mm. It's about the relationship between an adult and a mentally challenged man who he takes under his wing. And it's an incredibly cliched setup, and some people have issues with the way it's executed, but he's trying to do something very earnest. Mm-hmm. And so is Mr. Nobody, but Mr. Nobody is doing that through all of this CG. I mean, it's every Volkswagen commercial that was made that year. It's happening, right? I mean, you have the sense that it's, and if you believe the idea that the whole film is itself the primal stew of this child's character, he probably just saw that on television and he's incorporating it into his into his perspective. And that's incredibly ambitious and really difficult to get across. But it's also rooted in this pain of an adult looking back at a choice he didn't know he was making when he made it.
Yep.
That's the thing that I cling to.
Watching absolutely.
Because I'll be honest with you, I hated it when I saw it in 2011. Yeah,
I agree with you in the sense that when I'm watching it, if I didn't have the philosophical traits that I do and spiritual and all that stuff, I would think, man, this is another cheesy, you know, this is when Jared Leto picked something wrong. It just felt you could be taken the wrong way with how outgoing and quirky it was at times.
Yeah, it's a huge swing for Van Dormael, but that's all he does. Like, he makes these huge emotional reaches. His subsequent films, which I haven't seen because they didn't make it over here, are apparently improvised live recordings of, and no one is going to get this on the podcast because it's audio, of shots of hands being little feet, like fingers being legs, walking through landscapes. It. There's two of them. If you check the IMDb, I now need to see them because I didn't know they existed until yesterday and I'm just floored by the possibilities.
I love it. I feel like ever since I've always had a love for surrealism. Mm-hmm. I've always had a love for Salvador Dali because it expressed the most subconscious kind of places in our recesses of our mind that we hardly even know are there, most of us. Mm-hmm. And some people don't even know it's there and they love Salvador Dali and they don't know why they love it. And then for me personally, I've experienced a lot of crazy stuff like astral travel and maybe or maybe not psychedelics, but it has expressed another alternate perspective of life to me. And so that's why I know I love surrealism and stuff like that. And where was I going? Ever since I watched, because I was trying to look for where I could find surrealism in film, and there was a bunch of old like 40s and 50s ones that were around, and they were pretty cool. But I feel like I hit the nail on the head when I found David Lynch, because I'm not really one to actually be like yourself. I'm really honorable of what you do because I really don't watch a lot of movies. Mm-hmm. I often got my head in books and stuff like that, and it's often the subjects in books that make me go out and try and find a movie like that. But what did I see? What's Eraserhead? That one, it just tripped me out because I know most people wouldn't get it and they just feel disgusted by it, but at the same time it tickled that place in me that loved the stuff that didn't make sense, because in a way it subconsciously made sense, you know. Mm-hmm. So ever since that, I have a real like broad range of what I like in movies. And that's why 2001 Space Odyssey sits well with me. I feel like with some people, it's so slow and it's a job to watch that. But I don't know. I look for anything that's different, that's done differently. And it just, I honor it because I'm like, man, why didn't I think of that? It's just like, so it can be silly sometimes, but it's so genius in the way that it is so simple. Yeah. Like the hands. I love that. It's great.
I really need to see how that works. I
mean, funny.
Is there a score? Is it improvised music? How do you actually create emotion when you have no faces to connect to? But
I love that. But
Mr. Nobody, I'm thinking like, I'm trying to place Van Dormael's, what he does in this film in a context that accommodates Lynch, but they're so completely differently. Lynch is so obsessively handcrafted and so textural, and so much of Mr. Nobody intentionally is superficial surface imagery.
True.
I mean, it opens a door to something else, and it's about that glossiness. I don't think that's a negative that it looks like it does, but it's really, you know, coming back to it for this, I realized there's so much going on that is supposed to be on the surface because it's really not important. It's all the trip to Mars is in a lot of ways a child's fantasy of what going to Mars would be like, because when children are children, they're like, oh, I want to be a fireman, I want to be an astronaut. And it really is that simplistic, an execution of that idea. So it's the intentionality is there. Like, he knows what he's doing and he's doing it very clearly. And I have to say, I did not give Jared Leto enough credit for that performance because he is doing different things in different tones and different sequences.
Yeah. Yep.
And this is the other weird thing. A week ago today, I released an episode with Sarah Polley talking about The Thin Red Line, of all things, which Jared Leto is in. And then in the course of that, she kind of casually mentions, well, you know, I've worked with him, and it's like, oh, right, of course, you're in Mr. Nody together. I totally forgot about that. Mm-hmm. But then she goes and makes Stories We Tell, which is a film about the creation of a personality. I mean, it's ultimately, I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a documentary. No. Okay. It's tremendously good. It's a movie about her family, about her mom who died when she was a child and what happened after that and the stories that came out about her parents' relationship. And then of course it's her origin story. She's telling the story of how she became who she is. And one of the most important moments of the film, of Stories We Tell in the narrative, happens when she gets a piece of information and she's reading it on her iPhone and she's dressed in it's a photograph that was taken by a publicist, and she's dressed in the Cro-Magnon costume from Mr. Nobody. And so here we are again talking about that. And it just...
Yeah, that's trippy.
It knits it all together in a really weird way, which I think is just fascinating and kind of what the movie's about.
That is what I love. I love... Yeah, I might not convey this correctly, but I'm into symbolism, ancient symbolism, and there's one symbol. It's called I don't even know how to say it properly. Ouroboros.
Ouroboros, snake eating snake.
Yeah. I'm like, if someone can do that with a movie, like, I don't know, if you can make a movie somewhat of a fractal of what you're experiencing in life, I think that's a very fascinating thing to play with. Yeah, I want to achieve that myself one day. That's why I'm, studying a lot of these movies now when I didn't before, because I had my head in books and stuff. But I'm trying to look for the influence of how I can make that my own and how I want to convey that message myself. But yeah, Memento, I don't know if it doesn't have to do with identity. It doesn't have to do with sci-fi, but it's another cool way of telling a story in a revolutionary way.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is kind of a time travel film if you see it from the perspective of the audience, right? We're going backwards and forwards at the same time.
Yeah.
It feels kind of strange that Nolan ultimately did with Tenet what he did with Memento 20 years later. In the storytelling, which goes backwards and forwards, you have this same thing where what it's really about is a filmmaker who's obsessed with this one concept that he can't let go of.
Yeah.
Coming back to
When I saw him... I saw on an Instagram one day, like, he had a whiteboard and he was drawing a graph of how Memento is actually watched and how one story coincides and then they both meet at the... I was like, whoa, that has blown my mind. And if I can do something like that, that would be awesome. I love that. I love that concept.
Yeah. And Mr. Nobody does it in a different way, which is like dropping a drinking glass and watching it shatter.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're seeing all of these potential fragments. And again, that's what hit me this time, is just how sad it is that ultimately you're watching someone process a tragedy he doesn't fully understand through, you know, a comic book perspective, because that's all a child will have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. Wait, so remind me, the trauma that the child went through. Maybe I'm missing something.
It's just the idea that he thinks he chose which parent, that he believes that, right? That he's been carrying this, and we're watching this process of him unpacking it himself and his decisions.
Yeah.
And what I mean, I'll be a little personal here. I was 10 when my parents divorced, and I felt that very profoundly. It's one of those things that you can look back on when you're an adult and realize, no, it was the best thing. If they'd stayed together, it would have been even worse and horrible for everybody. And what issues we all have are healthier for not having them persist, right, past a certain point. Yeah. And then I watched Mr. Nobody and realized, no, that's kind of what this is about. But I didn't see it the first time. Like, I know myself so well, but I missed it. I just,
You're right. Because I've only seen it once and I couldn't trigger myself back to what you're thinking in terms of the trauma. But now I remember the train and all that. Yeah, I had a similar effect in my life when my parents separated, but it was actually reversed. First, I was like, no, this is for the best, you know. I was actually relieved because it would be more functional for both of them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was the best, happiest route for all of it. And then later, I guess when you get older, you have the opposing thought, like you did. You had the other one first and the other one later.
Yeah.
But yeah, you think like, yeah, that movie definitely made me think. It's all about fate, kind of bringing it back to 2067. I think it has a lot to do with the idea of fate as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, I think it's Plato, one of Plato's theories. It's the fork in the road. And it's points in life when you can clearly, vividly see that one choice is about to, you know, extremely take you on an extremely different course than the other. And you just choose from the two. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. For me, it's always been post facto. I only ever realize the moments after the fact.
Yeah.
True. Which I think is probably a good thing, because if I thought about them in the moment, I wouldn't do anything.
Hey, totally. I freeze. I'm the worst with decision making. Yeah. I'm the worst. Can't do it.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about 2067 a little bit in that context, though, because it is about someone who's put on a journey to meet himself in a fairly literal and also philosophical way, with the time travel gimmick being just an excuse, right? Because ultimately, it's a long conversation between two characters about what to do and what not to do. And that was
the gamble. And you've said, I'm sorry to cut you off, but you've said it because no one else said it today, is that like, I'm reading the script and I'm like, man, this is all, first of all, just going to be so challenging because of the amount of dialogue there is. And it's not like, usually if it's a Western or something, you're talking about, you know, we're going here, this is the intent and there's that. But in this, it was sci-fi gibberish. So I was like, man, he's talking about reactors and freaking compression switches. These are going to be so hard to like memorize all this stuff. But I just brought it back to the intention of, you know, what it's all about to pull that off. But you're right. It is literally, not to make it sound boring, because there's so much more that goes along with the entertainment of this, but it is literally like a big conversation about what to do. And to think about putting yourself in the situation that he's in, it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
But yeah, I mean, if you obviously put the fate of the human race on a character, that's going to be interesting on its own. That's going to be a reason to follow his decisions. But the thing that really struck me about this is that the balance between what your character is doing and what he wants to do is sort of the same as when you mentioned when Mr. Nobody came up as an option. It's like, oh, of course, it makes perfect sense. It's about the crushing weight of a decision.
Absolutely. And that, true. There's a lot of parallels. Maybe that's what kind of drew me to this because of stories like that. But yeah, I mean, that can be an ongoing discussion forever. And I guess we'll never know if it's, what's the saying, if it's fate or
free will or destiny.
Yeah. Fate or free will. Yeah. It's strange, that one. But of course, in this story, it brings up the idea of also selflessness and selfishness. But man, it's scary to think that in his circumstance, it could be considered selfish to simply want your life back, want to be with your wife, want everything that brings you joy, you know? Yeah, it's very, very scary. But hopefully it kind of, in a macrocosmic way, can express the selflessness that this world kind of needs, you know? Maybe what causes us to be so ignorant towards the awareness that the Mother Nature needs and nature itself, it's because we're so comfortable, you know, within our little fantasy, within the little house that the government, you know, gives us in the job. And, you know, I think it's because we're comfortable. So, hopefully that gets across too. But I think overall, I like to be a part of movies that will not only entertain you, but that will spark discussion, spark curiosity within you, and possibly, you know, change the fate of every little human seeing it. I mean, that's such an amazing thought to me, that it's much like it's like a fractal. It just keeps going and going and going, that, you know, statistically a good handful of people that see this movie will think about the world and themselves in a different way and possibly carry themselves different to a different fate.
That would be nice. I mean, we could just use more inspiration in general. And it is kind of amazing too, that you have the, I don't know that the word luck can be applied to anything that happens in 2020, but the idea that there's a film right now about people who have to wear masks or they'll die, that opens up into a larger conversation about personal responsibility and other things we need to do for each other. I mean, it is kind of the right time for that.
I know. Seriously, it's so eerie to me. It couldn't be a better time. It's just shocked us all. I've been speaking to the director, recently saw him. And you can imagine just the conversations that we've had, because it's just like we didn't plan any of this. You know, nothing like that was happening when we were shooting.
Of course.
2067. I think the fires in Australia were just beginning, maybe. Like, it's crazy how it's all come to fruition. But at the same time, you know, like, I'm somewhat not shocked that it happened. You know, something, our lifestyle mirrored this movie within my life. But I just didn't think it would be so quick. But yeah. Hopefully I think that's a great factor for the movie in terms of press and, you know, just, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good hook. I mean, it'll get it out there. And also, even without that, there's also the fact that we were talking before we started recording that the last time we met, you were in the road. So is it you? Are you just doing this? Is this Nobody situation is my question here. Are you making it happen? Because you could stop.
Honestly, I have thought about this so much. There are so many parallels. There are so many parallels between the movies that I've done and my personal life. The two is, obviously, one is the apocalyptic thing. Mm-hmm. You got The Road. Then you have Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Then you have literally X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And then you have 2067, and I swear, Young Ones is the world.
That's true, that counts.
Like Mad Max, on the brink with no water. It's crazy. It's amazing. It's amazing to see how Apocalypse can go so many diverse different ways. I love that too.
Yeah.
But I think it's just, I never consciously chose to do apocalyptic stuff, but I chose to do stuff that's meaningful. So I guess what my heart is telling me is that the most kind of something that can draw a lot of meaning out for people and make them look at their life is to take it all away.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, I think if you're not thinking about it on some level in the last decade, you're just not paying attention. The sense of a very delicate future has been weighing on us for
doom,
a while.
Impending doom for sure. It feels very fragile, the state of the world. And like you said, you're either, you're on one side or the other, trying to tell the world and trying to do something better, or somewhat ignorant of it and living in your kind of fantasy. But, I can't take part in protests or any of that stuff. And I don't want to be too vocal as Cody Smith McPhee on my Instagram, because that's when these days it's so fragile that you can get canceled. So I would rather, I'm grateful that I can actually express those messages through the vessel of a movie, through the vessel of a genius writer or director, and kind of be protected by that. But I really do hope it kind of festers in people for the better.
Yeah. And you said you were exploring surrealism in film for your own inspiration and purposes. Are you looking to work in that field? Are you hoping to make your own
definitely,
film, make your own statement?
Definitely. I would love to start with a short film. Just to kind of, take the steps humbly, because I've observed directors my whole life and I've seen the stress that they go through creating a real, film, whether it be indie or franchise. So I'd love to take on a short film. And I definitely have a lot in me that I've want to express to the world. I have a lot that doesn't even come with words, like just visually, imagery and things like that. That's where the surrealism comes into it. Like some of Salvador Dali's paintings, they gave me a sense of, like, in my waking state, being as close to what it feels like to be in my dreaming state. So I think that is even easier to pull off through film, with, the special effects and things that we have these days. I would love to do that, but I just have so much going on in my head that I don't know necessarily where to start sometimes, but baby steps.
Yeah.
I think mostly I'm just really still a sponge and taking in imagery and what directors have already done, what's already been done, and how to reinvent that. I'm a big believer in, like, everything has already been done, but it's simply reinvented, even if it's been done cognitively or not. So I think I'd rather know what's out there and consciously do something different, but the same.
Yeah. Well, I think of it like an accent, right? Everybody can do Shakespeare, but not everybody does it in the original intention. You can come up with Americanizations. Yeah. There are great French adaptations. You can do what you can recontextualize it, but you can find a way to make it your own.
Exactly. Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, start with a short film, because I see a lot of the context of like the short films, and I'm kind of confused sometimes, not to talk down on them, but like, I know it's just about pulling something off and the experience of the creative process and getting it on screen and stuff. But it's just like, there's never any body to these short films, you know, that's like an ending that's, I don't know, it's not enough for me. So if I can fulfill that for me, not for anyone else, just for me, I know that it'll do it for other people as well. And it would be a good launch into, you know, possibly making a feature film.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I know what you mean about the shorts. Sometimes they're statements and sometimes they're calling cards.
Yeah. I don't know. It's confusing, but I guess I just don't know enough about that world just yet. I might experience the same thing, but I get to the end of them sometimes and I'm like, what? You know, it's just sometimes it's the cop out of just like, you know, oh, they wake up and it was just a dream. It's like, we can go deeper with the 30 minutes that we have.
Yeah, we can absolutely do that.
Yeah.
My thanks to Cody Smit McPhee, whose new film 2067 is now available on digital and on demand. Thanks also to Suzanne Sheridan. She knows what she did. You can find Cody on Twitter at Cody Smit McPhee, all one word, no hyphen, and you can find Mr. Nobody on Blu-ray and DVD from Magnolia in the US and Entertainment One in Canada. It's also available on Apple TV and Google Play, and streaming in the US on Magnolia Selects, Hoopla, and Tubi. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Norm Wilner and elsewhere on the internet at nowtoronto.com, where I'm hosting a bunch of podcasts these days, and also writing about film and television. And you can find this podcast on Twitter at Semcast, S-E-M-Cast, and on the web at someoneelsesmovie.com. Our theme song is by The Last Year. If you like it, or the show in general, say so. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever you've been enjoying us. Every little bit helps, it truly does. And check out the other shows on the Frequency Podcast Network while you're at it. But for the most part, stay inside, watch movies, wear a mask if you go out. Think about all the futures in which you don't get COVID. I'll see you next week.